Welcome to Divergent Paths. I'm the host, Dan Dunford, and happy last week of July. I guess I don't have anything better than that at the moment. Hope you're having a good week. Hope things are going well. So, news before I get to talking about the guest. I have said I was launching a YouTube channel both of the last 2 weeks. This week is the week that it actually happens. The first video will be going up tomorrow, which is Tuesday. It's basically kind of a companion piece to my interview with Emily Davidson. Just a speed round. Did all the work on it earlier today. Just kind of a way to ease in. I'll be starting to do these speed round videos with all of my guests, unless there is someone who really, really doesn't want to. So that will be coming tomorrow. And in addition to these speed round type companion pieces, which, by the way, is all content that will not be included on the audio, podcast. These are all separate. To see this other stuff, you have to see it. You have to go to YouTube and watch it there. All pretty short videos, the speed round, thus the speed. And I'm gonna, I tried out. I couldn't think of a name for the speed round videos, so I outsourced it, and came up with Reverse Oracle, which sounds really crazy. I understand, but hey. Usually you go to the Oracle and he gives you all the answers, but the idea is that I have all the questions. So reverse, there's a very good possibility I'll regret this name very soon. But you know what? It's fun no matter what happens. But yeah, in addition to the quick question videos, I'll also be doing some documentary short type deals. Today I'm going to be doing filming on the first one, which will be a documentary short kind of deal with Will Lang, who is recording an album at Octaven Studios this week. So we'll see. I'm just kind of experimenting, seeing what happens, and as things progress, they'll go up. In addition to all of these other, to these original content videos, every episode of Divergent Paths podcast is also on the YouTube channel. It's already there. All these links will be shared. I'll be putting it on the podcast page and everything. I'll be sharing these links out. Right now, it doesn't have a easy to deal with web address, because apparently you can't pick your web address until you get over 100 subscribers, so that's exciting and frustrating, but hopefully I'll be able to do that soon, and we'll see what happens. So, in addition to the YouTube channel, I'm also launching a Patreon account, because, at some point, I've been doing the audio podcast for almost a year. I've only missed 1 week out of that year, and it's a lot of time, it's a lot of energy, it's money that I'm spending out of my own pocket to do the videos and to do the interviews. I'm not paying people to interview them, but there's a lot that goes into it, equipment, time, etc. So I'll be launching that Patreon account tomorrow as well, on Tuesday. I'll be providing links, so hop on over to that and take a look tomorrow. And if, you have the ability to throw a few dollars my way, I will greatly appreciate it, and I'll figure out some way to thank you. Anyway, got all that out of the way. This week's guest is Sarah Goldfeather, who's a wonderful violinist, very busy, high energy, nice person who was fun to talk to. she is runs and is a member is a member of and runs a number of groups, the Acceptet, Goldfeather, which is her bluegrass band, this group, Fragments Duo, for which is violin and voice, and has more coming up. Like, she just doesn't stop. She just doesn't stop creating. So she was really fun to talk to. So featured on this episode is a track from Goldfeather's eponymous album. And that track is called Spilled Milk. It's really good. I mean, she does a lot, but she's good at what she does. So I hope you enjoy that. Enjoy the interview. And if you enjoy the interview, please subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. If you're subscribed to Google Play, also on Google Play Music. When the YouTube channel goes up tomorrow, please hop on over that and subscribe. I'm proud of the stuff that I'm doing, so, and I'm putting a lot of work into it, so I hope you enjoy it. Yeah. Awesome. So you like do music and you write things?
I do, yeah.
You play like violin and shit, right? That's
like all thing. Yeah, all that sort of thing, you know.
Oh really? Okay. That's good. We got it. We're done.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I don't think we need anything more.
No, like that's all we need to talk about.
Cool. Yeah, just getting the facts straight. You can make everything else up.
It's like I write for Vanity Fair or something. this is a profile, not an actual interview.
Perfect. I love sensationalism.
Well, thanks for sitting down with me. This is, you know, it's funny. There was a period of time before I kind of like started to just do it, most of it myself. Trevor knew he used to like do work on all my episodes, you know, produce some of them. He was an early guest, and. You know, he'd be like, "Oh, you know, do you know Sarah Goldfeather?" I was like, "No." I was like, well, "I think it was like, it's when I was out taping the interview with like the solo interview with Ben," and he's like, "Oh yeah, you should definitely get a hold of her." And I was like, "Okay, cool." Like people say that to me all the time.
Like, oh yeah, you should know this person. How do you not know this person?
Oh, you know, I'm playing with this so and so. You should totally talk to them. I'm like, okay, I have no problem with that, but I don't know them personally, and. So I have other people say something similar, similar things, mostly like the Ben Brody, Trevor, like that crowd is like, oh, you should totally talk to Sarah. I'm like, okay. And then, you know, 6 months later, here we are in the Bronx on a, well, in an undisclosed location, undisclosed project for an undisclosed company that was may or may not have been filming a commercial. I don't know. It's
not wiped. For us to say.
It's been wiped. Yeah. But then, yeah, it's just like trombone people, you know, you got to ask. People are like, oh, you know so-and-so? Oh, you're that person. So that's how we met. That was, you know, doesn't happen as much as you might think. Like, just like, oh, running into people on,
exactly.
Especially if they don't play a brass instrument. I'm better connected with like non-brass players than most people expect, but it's still, there's just so many people to keep track of. It's frustrating. Because I want to talk to all of them. Anyway,
you all should. Of that. Let's go down the list.
Yeah, let's just go. So you do a bunch of stuff, right? So you're
sure.
you play violin. That's yes. That's one part of it.
Correct.
You have your you run the Acceptet, which is
yes.
We'll get into like more of what the fuck that means.
Great. Love it. Can't wait.
But you artist, you know, that's more of like a classical ish. Ensemble, and then you do your like the singer songwriter business as well, which also you know works nicely. You know, violin is like a nice thing that goes along with that. You can like play on your own tracks and your own songs.
Yeah, that's like what I was like. Folk music, violins are in folk music,
right? I had a I have a friend of mine who's like, trombone is like a strangely flexible instrument when it comes to that. Like you know these great bands, you know like the National and Beirut, they use brass sections. But you like talk to a folk singer and you're just like, yeah, I'd love to, that'd be cool to play with you. You just kind of a look like,
Mm. You're like, do you play anything else?
I don't know. I'm just like, come on. I love playing folk music.
Yeah, give but violin has no place in music that I like to listen to. I'll be like, oh, yeah, like, I mean, it's not that it has no place, but I'll be like, oh, yeah, like a rock band or like electronics music. I'm into that. And then like a violin, I feel like a violin sometimes sounds really corny in that context.
Well, you just got to use the electric violin.
See? Yeah, you're right. That's
the flying
that's a way.
V. What's...
You just have to use a lot of like new music techniques to make it sound like distortion.
Yeah, well... Just, if you don't want to use an electric instrument.
Yeah, you gotta just make your own, you know, organic distortion.
So, I mean, that's like a broad thing. Now, that's kind of, you know, we were just kind of briefly talking about that before I, you know, hit the record button, but...
See, I didn't even know. You did that so subtly. I was like,
oh, that's the idea.
All right, cool.
You know, you want to trick people into saying things that they wouldn't otherwise say.
Such a good reporter.
Yeah.
Investigative journalism.
All about tricking people. Because tricking people leads to good connections down the road. Tricking people into saying things they don't want to say.
Yeah, definitely. So it makes really you a reliable technique. Person yes, to trust later.
Absolutely. But we were saying, you know, like just the idea of, you know, whether it was me or you, like, just, well, you have to write, you know, you have to write your own stuff. And yeah. You have to do this own, you know, do your own thing. What point, you know, we'll get back into like why you started all this stuff, you know, started playing and stuff. But like at what point in your career were you like, oh man, I really have to start I really have to do all of these different things or else I'm just going to be sitting at home or sitting in an office wishing I had more time to do what I wanted to do.
That's an interesting... I feel like I wasn't like, you know what? I should start 4 projects right now.
Yeah, it's never kind of... it's never that easy. It's never that clean of a break.
No, it was definitely... There's a lot of, you know... So I was in a bluegrass band for a while, like when I first moved to New York City. I answered a Craigslist ad, as one does.
My first paying gig in New York came off Craigslist.
Yeah, you got to do it. And that turned out to be... great. It was a great group. I ended up leaving that group and I was like, I'm going to start my own project because there's a bluegrass band. I was like, I'll start my own bluegrass band. So yeah, it started, you know, we had a show in like April 2012 and we had like 4 songs and I was really nervous because I had never written music before. But yeah, it was really fun and I sort of kept building it up and kept doing it. And yeah, we recorded an EP and that was fun. But I never like saw it really, it was like a fun hobby for at the beginning at least. And then I got my master's degree, so it sort of went on a bit of a hiatus. So yeah, so I got my master's in violin performance. And I went to the Bang in a Can Festival for 2 years, which is really just, and that was sort of like a turning point in my musical career because I met so many incredible musicians. I sort of saw like, it's so possible to be a musician in this way. Like it was really, really eye-opening. So I'm like so, so thankful for that experience. And I also met some people there that were like, hey, we should start a group. And so that group became Accepted. yeah, but it wasn't like, I wasn't like, I need to have a chamber group right mm-hmm. now. It was just sort of like,
it kind of was like, oh,
we're like, we're friends. I guess we're gonna have music.
I guess we're gonna have a chamber group now.
Yeah. And we sort of like, so it started with me and Chuck Furlong on clarinet and Mark Utley on percussion. And we were like, who are our friends? You know, like what kind of group can we start? And for some reason we landed on a histoire ensemble. It's like, it's certainly looking back, I'm not sure exactly why we chose that. I think we were like, oh, the Pierrot ensembles, that's been done. What's another group that has violin, percussion, and clarinet in it? So yeah.
And also you can like title after like a historical precedent, a famous
yeah,
piece
Stravinsky
of music.
Was totally there, man. So we, you know, so we got these awesome players and I'm like super excited to be working with them. They're great players and people.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, that's fine. No,
yeah, whatever.
Well, we all love our friends. No, I'm just kidding. So like to go back to like more of a beginning deal, why did you start playing violin and why did you end up deciding to like
to go do from, the violin.
Go from playing violin to playing violin.
I getcha. Well, well, I started the violin when I was a young 7-year-old girl growing up in Minnesota.
Minnesota.
You betcha. Yeah, I just, the accent kind of slipped out earlier.
Hey, you know, I'm not going to make fun of any kind of accents. Most of my life has been spent in the South and in the Indiana, which all has right. its own
well, no comment.
Its own thing. So it's like...
Indiana, maybe not so much of an accent. Minnesota's got the
Fargo
situation.
It's up through the nose, but not quite as far up through the nose.
I gotcha. All right. Well, yeah, so anyway, so I started violin. I like played all through, you know, middle school, high school. Went to music camp for many years. Best years of my life.
Oh, of course, yeah. Did you, I mean, was there like just like a shit ton of music hanging around where you were? Or is it just kind of like...
Yeah, Minnesota actually has a really vibrant music scene. It was great.
Wait, were you near the Twin Cities?
Well, I was a 45-minute drive from my youth orchestra that I had every Saturday morning.
Not really.
Yeah. So, yeah, I would drive, you know, an hour and a half round trip to get to youth orchestra for our 3-hour Saturday morning rehearsals. It was great. I loved it.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you loved it. I'm sure your parents were like,
But, yeah, and then when I was 16 and I was driving myself, yeah. I was listening to music in the car. It was very edgy. You understand.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Not classical music, I might, might add. Anyway, no, I'm just kidding.
All Avril Lavigne.
Yeah. No, it was, like, of Montreal.
Yes,
I was, like,
nice.
in, like, you know, Arcade Fire, Decemberists.
Oh, so, like...
I was, like, very, you know...
You really wanted... You really loved those
mainstream edgy,
ginormous kind of... orchestral, like, we're so cool because we've got all the instruments.
Or just, like, I was, like, oh, like, you... Yeah, what a cool... I was into that sound. I still am, whatever.
I was, out of those, like, I've always had a weak spot for Of Montreal over those other groups because they're just so
Montreal's
fucking...
Of Montreal's my favorite band.
Because they're so fucking weird.
I know. I'll go. Awesome. I'll go on record. I just saw Kevin Parnes' solo show.
Nice.
At LPR. He's so. You can't see it, but I'm bowing down. Yeah. He's such a great songwriter.
Visual cues work great.
Yeah, yeah. Audio. Just you know, cueing you in. That's gonna be in parentheses and italics later. For the.
Anyway, so you're doing just like, growing up music.
Doing the growing up with music thing. Yeah.
Parents.
Non-musicians. My dad's a mathematician. And my mom is an artist. So they're both teachers of these subjects. So, yeah.
So, no, just like you're the...
Music appreciators. We listened to like top 40 classical music radio, like growing up.
Yeah.
Which is fine. So I like was very well versed in the, you know, symphonic works and the like. Yeah. And then I played them and that was fun. yeah. And then I went to Vassar for college, which is not really a music school per se, but they have like, actually pretty good...
Really?
Program.
Yeah, that's usually like Vassar is like shorthand for a lot of these. This is gonna sound not mean, but
bring it
it's
up.
Like it's like shorthand for like a specific type of educated woman. In a lot of ways, like
I've had enough of your Vassar bashing.
Or like you know, like really socially conscious. Sensitive men, supposedly, like it's like shorthand for like this.
Sure,
this
kinda... you're not wrong.
I'm not sure.
But music goes hand in hand with
absolutely. I you know, honestly, I don't know. This is all like cultural shit. I don't know. I really don't know that many people who went there. You know, so it's like it's always
well,
like
you know, at
it's
least
always
one.
The shorthand on like a television show. Like she went to Vassar. Oh,
yeah, there's always like sort of like a parody element of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
is it like that?
I mean, there's definitely like. Some of those high pitch getting in there.
Stereotypes are there for a reason, I suppose. But
yeah, I mean, in some ways, it's sort of, it was like I don't know. I like applied early decision to go there. It's sort of funny that I was like, yeah, Vassar's at school.
That's
I mean, it was great. I had a great time there.
So what is the music? You know, it's not necessarily something you think of like you just mentioned. It's not necessarily.
Oh, shout out to Skinner Hall. Yeah, it's an awesome music department.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, especially like academically speaking, like I was also like really into music history. And I was like the music history intern.
Gotcha. That makes a little more sense.
Yeah. So I was very much into the academic side. Honestly, when I was in college, I like didn't know that it was possible to be a musician. Like I thought that you had to go to a conservatory. Like I basically thought you had to go to Juilliard to like be a musician. And that was so, and I don't really blame Vassar for that. I think that was just my own, like.
Well, those are, especially if you, like, I was in a similar situation. If you grew up in a slightly more, I don't say rural, but rural-esque, you know, a type of thing outside of a major city, outside
provincial
of a major
life,
city.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like rural suburban.
Sure, yeah.
Like rural/suburban. Like that's just kind of what you assume. yeah, that's...
You well, go, it's not something that you see. Like, I'm sure if you grow up in New York City, you're like, yeah, cool, everyone can be an artist or a writer or a musician or whatever.
You don't necessarily have to go to Juilliard. You don't necessarily... Yeah, but if you're coming from a place... Like, I mean, if you're not going to go to University of Minnesota, or in my case, Florida State, like, you have to go to a conservatory to do the orchestral thing, and then that's your life.
Yeah, well, I also, at that time, I didn't understand about music outside of orchestral music, and outside, and so I was always just like...
Of course not.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't either.
Yeah, and I was like, I guess I don't want to be a orchestral musician, I don't know. But I thought that, like, I don't know, I mean, it was naivete on my part. I didn't really understand, like, how one became a musician. Otherwise, that it was even possible. Just it seemed like something that like I couldn't do at the time. And then I like decided to move to New York City, sort of on a whim after college.
Wait, where is Vassar? I'm not even sure I know where it is.
Oh, it's upstate. It's in Poughkeepsie.
Okay, that's
Hudson Valley. It's not upstate. Sorry, it's Hudson Valley.
Yeah.
For anyone listening,
it's not Hudson. My girlfriend's from Albany.
Okay, yeah.
So calling Poughkeepsie upstate is like a slap in the face.
Yeah, and calling Poughkeepsie upstate is also a slap in the face for people from Poughkeepsie.
Yeah, like...
Neither wants to be associated with the other, like, so, you know.
What was involved with, like, figuring out that, like, you could, like, make it into a career? If you're not, like, assuming that you're going to do that while you're at Vassar, like, was it while you were there you kind of figured it out?
Yeah. No, not at all. I mean, I was like, I'm going to be a music historian. That was my...
I mean, that's cool. Like, it's...
I'm glad. I don't think I really had the patience for that.
I mean, I love music history, but I'm always the worst at researching. Like,
oh, see, like, I loved research. I was all about writing a good paper. That was like, oof, I was...
You were all over that.
I was forced to be reckoned. I liked it, though.
But, like, Poughkeepsie is close enough to, like, the culture of, I mean, you know, I've
done... You, like, went into the city for...
Yeah, like, and if you live in the city, you do gigs up in that region, up in the Hudson Valley region, whether it's Poughkeepsie, whether it's Irving, like, all these places off the Metro North, if you will.
Yeah.
Like, so it's not... It's not completely separate, like you might think if you didn't live here. What was involved with you kind of figuring that out?
Figuring
out that, like, oh, like, no, like, people will pay me to do this.
Oh, it wasn't until I moved to New York. Like,
why did you move here?
Because a friend was like, we should move to New York.
Oh. that's all?
You're just like, yeah. Kind of. Well, I mean, I didn't know what else I was going to do, and I was pretty sure I didn't want to go back to Minnesota, and I was like... Yeah, New York. I mean, honestly, in retrospect, I, like, have no idea how I end up here. I feel like I literally was just like, oh, okay, cool. And then, like...
One summer after you graduate, it's like, oh, I guess
we're going. Yeah, and I was like, well, okay, I'll... I drove all my stuff from college home to Minnesota, and then I was like, yeah, sure, I'll drive back out.
Well, how long ago was this? What year was this?
That was 2010. And then I remember I got my... So actually, I showed up, and then, like, the very next day, I had my first... I was in the String Orchestra of Brooklyn, which even has a Vassar connection. Eli Spindell, the conductor, was a Vassar grad, so I, like, knew about the String Orchestra of Brooklyn. So I, like, met cool musicians
there. Yeah, that's... String Orchestra of Brooklyn's an inch, like... I don't know, do they pay the string section during the season?
They do it this time. Honestly, it's a really good hangout.
Yeah. No, like, that's... Like, I've played with them... I've done two different things... A couple different, whatever. I've played with them before, and it's like, it's just, yeah, it's nice. That's a nice, they rehearse in a nice church.
It's great.
And in the summer, it's actually, like, it's usually cooler because the stone is usually, not always.
Yeah, they just to, like, plug them a little bit. I mean, I actually haven't played with them in a while, but they're doing great things. They're like a community orchestra like none other, because they commission new pieces,
right.
And they're, like, really into contemporary music.
But, like, it's they're one of, there's a few orchestras, you know, that are, like, community orchestras that are actually better than some of the lower tier paying orchestras, because people are passionate about, like,
there's a lot of really awesome players who just decided that they didn't want to be professional players, but they're still really good at their instruments.
Yeah.
And it's, like, a really great outlet, you know.
And it's a good, like, entry point for young freelancers who move to the city, especially if they didn't go to school here.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, that was, like, my first musical, like, experience in New York. Yeah, so that was great, and I, like, met a lot of amazing people who I ended up sort of working with in different ways, and so I'm glad for that. And I also became an usher at what was then Avery Fisher, so I wore a tuxedo to work every day.
Nice.
Yeah, and had a little walkie-talkie up the sleeve. It was pretty flashy.
Yeah, you gotta make sure that these old people aren't opening their hard candies too loudly.
It was mostly like photography and roasty. It was a lot of that. It's funny because then I would go to concerts I would go to concerts later and I would be like, oh my god, that person's taking a picture, and I would feel like anxiety about it.
Oh.
But then I realized it didn't matter because I wasn't a working usher in that moment, you know.
And guess what? It doesn't matter that much, even if you are an usher.
I feel like hi, now, ushers. This was before like hashtags were a thing. Yeah. Like now I'd be like hashtag New York Phil, hashtag OMG, you know, like music.com.
Especially now that cameras are quiet and most people are smart enough to take the flashes off.
I think it's probably some union thing. I honestly don't even know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I was just following orders.
Absolutely. Like it's like some sort of like copy. Like people can sell pictures of the. Yeah. Okay. Anyway.
Yeah. Some like shitty iPhone photos. Really.
Well,
like,
the thing is now that like iPhones are so good at these kind of things.
Yeah.
Like people film feature films on iPhones now.
That seems
good. Good ones too, like it's crazy. Anyway, like I've been doing research on that because I can't afford a camera, and also if people are like winning awards for filmed on iPhones at Sundance, then if I'm just making shit for a YouTube channel, I don't need to buy something. I just need to know how to do it so it looks good. Anyway, that's unrelated. So you like were moving to New York and shit.
Yeah.
And like playing.
I was maybe like the first musician to move to New York.
Yes.
So I felt very special and my pioneering.
And everyone wanted you.
Pioneering a trope. Yeah.
You were the you were the first blonde girl from the Midwest to move to New York to make her fortune.
I wasn't blonde then. I had like weird red hair. It was a strange situation. I like cut my own hair at the end of college. It was not a good look. It was a great look. It was me. I went blonde later. They seemed to have more fun waiting for that. But.
I've heard.
Yeah, there's some rumors going around.
Yeah, it had something to do with that woman. She was like a famous person back in the 60s.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Who even knows?
Yeah, like she had a name. I don't know where it was. Anyway. there's a lot of things that go along with that. Musician trying to like moving to New York business, that's shitty. Like there's a lot of shitty stuff that goes
along
with
it. Bring
it on. Yeah. But I mean, well, like how did you kind of figure that? I mean, it's harder if you are a person moving to New York without having like established. If you go to school here, you can start to build that professional network while you're still in school.
Yeah.
As long as you don't go to Juilliard, like, you know, you're usually at a school that lets you out of the building a little bit, and you can start working on that while you're still a student.
How?
Yeah,
well,
that
Craigslist thing. I also started. I was dating somebody at the time who was a composer who sort of like plugged me into the new music world a little bit. So that was also really helpful. So I like met a lot of people that way, and they sort of became my friends, and I feel like. The weird thing about like being like a freelance musician, which I'm sure you know, is that like there's just like a very nebulous line between friendship and
networking.
Like I work with my friends all the time, for better or for worse. Sometimes it's awesome, sometimes it's not.
Yeah.
But there is like a really blurred line. Like you'll be hanging out with people who ostensibly you work with, and it's like, you know, kind of seamlessly.
Well, and a lot of this, like, not to interrupt you too much, but like a lot of this is. You're doing stuff, but then after you work together, you are usually, there's like the quote, put it in air quotes, the hang.
Oh, that's like the best thing you can do for your career, is hang out after
the
show.
Yeah, you're like, it's professional, but you're also just like hanging out, not necessarily talking about music, kind of getting drunk together.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like.
But then you'll be like, hey, we should like do something. I have met so many people just like at. After shows, like I'm in another thing I do is I'm in a soprano violin duo with Justine Aronson, awesome singer. But we were like friends. I actually met, a funny story about how I met her. We were having a party at our house, and she came. She was like invited, but I had never met her before. And we were sitting in the bedroom with another person, and I was like, "We should sing Christmas carols." And Justine walked in, and I was like, "Do you want to sing with us?" And so for the next like hour, we just sang Christmas carols in 3-part harmonies. Like it was so. So at that point, I was like, "All right, Justine's great. She's good in my book." Anyway, and then I went to. She had a recital, and I went to a recital, and afterwards we were hanging out, and I was like, we should do something together. There's like this piece, the Kafka fragments that we talked about. That, like, yeah, we should like get that together. And then we did, and we decided to be a duo. We're called the Fragments Duo, so aptly named. And we've been doing a lot of stuff with that. But yeah, but literally that came out of like social, like that sort of professional thing came out of socializing.
And, you know, it's funny. Like I have a couple trombonist friends who have done a lot, like who are very, you know, fairly responsible for me, like. Like helping me get into doing stuff with people that not matter, but you know, like different
connected. In
yeah,
ways,
like
yeah.
yeah, connected people, a different circle. One that you know, people that are helpful to know, like will be helpful to know, like 5 years down the road,
yeah.
as opposed
to also Machiavellian. But yeah, it's true.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, well, it's fucking. But it's funny because you know, I've been around people where I was having a bad like. There was a period a few months ago where I had like recently just quit smoking, so I was like tense, like really tense. And I was hanging out with a buddy of mine who was happened to be in the Bronx, was hanging out, and there was something that he said about like a work type thing that like rubbed me the wrong way, and I just kind of went off, but not like necessarily on him, but just like, oh, I hate how this works. Like this really frustrates me, and like I thought I was talking to my friend. But I was actually, it kind of felt like I was, all of a sudden I was talking to my colleague, not to my friend. And it was like, okay, maybe, you know.
Well, that's the thing. you do have to be careful.
Yeah.
You know.
So like, what is it, you know, back to, you know, sorry, back to kind of what you're saying, you know, a lot of this stuff that you're doing, you know, is like new music related.
Yeah.
New music adjacent, if not straight
new
up.
New music adjacent is definitely a good way of putting it.
Yeah, like, well, because.
I mean, yeah, I do new music stuff, but there's like weird.
There's a new music mafia in New York that's very protective, but that's, you know, that's fine. And there are.
But there are different factions.
Yeah, there are different factions, and everyone's.
There's Uptown and Brooklyn, like, they're like completely different. And, which just sounds so funny to
the thing is all of them are really fucking good. That's most, you know, like across the board, that's.
Yeah.
Fairly high level, like, no matter... Well, anyway, but, like, was that something you were always into? Like, what were your interests, like, when you were coming in? Were you just kind of like, I'll do whatever? Or did you were like, oh, I want to do this or that?
Oh, I was just, like, a fresh ball of clay. Yeah, I mean... I had, like, sort of, you know, musical ideas. But basically, like I said, I sort of, like, became part of the new music community and sort of made friends and went to a lot of concerts. And I really enjoyed the music that my friends were making. And I kind of just wanted to know more, and it just like the whole culture around it fascinated me. But mostly, I just thought it sounded great, and I just was really impressed with like what all these people were doing, and I kind of strove for that. And like I said, so going to Bang on a Can was sort of like a huge turning point for me.
Right. Yeah. There's just that's people from all over the world, just like who.
Well, yeah, and it's also just, like you're
so good at
you're
this
just like
thing.
You're just like broing down with people who are like world class musicians, and you're just like. Getting beers with them and like go, you know, doing crazy nonsense and like, but you're like, wow, but you're like really good at your instrument. So that was sort of like a fun breakdown where it's like, oh, you, I like, I'm such a fan of your work. And
was that like an, I've never like really looked into being like involved in that myself, so I don't really know how, like, is there an audition process?
Or it's like any sort of summer festival,
but it's like a summer festival, but also like a professional network.
There's like a whole community, and like
there's like a Bang on the Can community. Community.
Yeah, their alumni presence is very strong. Like I think everyone who goes there feels
because there's a
very
blurred and every time I know people who go there, like there's a blurred line between whether you're going as an artist and whether you're going as a student. Like a lot of times,
well, not there's like faculty and fellows is what they call them. You know,
that I think I'm thinking of the fellows.
The fellows are the ones who have to audition.
Yeah,
gotcha. Yeah, and then the faculty they're just really good.
Yeah, but like whenever there's stuff like promotional stuff that I see, like I'm never sure whether it's like, oh, is this fat or is it,
like the Bang in a Can All-Stars are like, that's like their, I mean, that's the thing, that's the beauty of the Bang in a Can is that there are like so many different things at once. Like,
right. It's all nebulous and it's all like awesome and helpful, like for everyone, whether you're faculty, whether you're a student, whether you're both, whether like, whether you were a student and now you're faculty.
But it really like, socially levels the playing field. Like, it's like crazy. It was crazy for me to be like, oh my God, like, I'm working on a project. I worked on a project with Julia Wolf after Bang in a Can, and like that was so like crazy for me, because like Julia Wolf's kind of a big deal, and but at Bang in a Can festival, like, we're all just getting lunch together, all going to the bar afterwards,
Whereas, to this concert. Like in a lot of festival type situations, there's a very clear demarcated line between. Here's the faculty.
Well, yeah, that's the faculty so
tables. That's where they eat, and here's the students.
Yeah, and I feel like the faculty just really, I think they probably see the fellows as like potential future collaborators, and they're not just like, okay, we'll train you and then good luck. Like, I've seen a lot of people who've gone to Bang in a Can who are now working very closely with faculty members.
Exactly. Like, including myself. It also there's also a youth movement in the new music community. So like
totally
like a lot of times, so like even like someone. Someone who is as well known and as famous as why did her name just entirely Julie Wolf? That's not who I was gonna say, but I just totally fucking blanked on her name. Caroline Shaw.
Oh yeah, Caroline. Yeah.
Yeah, like I mean, she's a person who's done all this crazy shit,
but she's also really nice.
She's a
nice gal,
sweetheart.
Yeah.
And like what, 33, 34, like
something like that. Like, yeah.
With, young. Yeah, but like that's becoming more of the, you know, it's not so much this school of dusty old professors, you know, holding up the classics of the new music classics of Xenakis and Berio and shit,
which
are all awesome.
Yeah,
like,
they should be studied.
Those all should be studied. They should continue to be performed. Stockhausen as well.
But they don't count. I don't think they count as contemporary music anymore.
No, they're not. They're 60 years old.
Yeah, exactly.
They're 60 years old. So like you've got young people, like younger young people, the youngins, like really going in on all this shit.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is too, like. At in grad school, I remember speaking of Julie Wolf, I was working with this quartet, and we were doing early that summer with one of her quartets, and I remember we like had a coaching on it, and like the coach, I won't say who it was, but he was just like didn't know what to do with it, and he was like, yeah, I did some stuff with new music, like some Schnitke, and I was like, what?
No, come on.
Like, that does not count.
Not anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Or just like, that's not new music.
Well,
like a great musician. I'm not bashing him at
all.
Of
course
not. It's
just like
a completely different kind of music.
I was reading something from a string quartet that was, someone had asked them in an interview, like, whether they did contemporary music, and they said, yes, we did Webern This Morning. And
you're
it was like, just kind of like, are you kidding me? That's over
like
100
years old, yeah.
100 plus, yeah. And, And these are like you just mentioned, like these are great musicians who are doing this, but it's kind of like it's a completely different ballgame. Like, you can't, you know.
No, it's interesting. But I mean, on the flip side, like, there's a lot of great new music being generated, but also like there's something about like the older music has stood the test of time, and with new music we don't have that advantage. So like, if you're premiering a piece, there's a risk involved. I mean,
they're not all going to be winners.
Sure, yeah. Even like a really good composer might have a piece that's like, well, you know.
And well, that's the thing. Like, that's the thing.
Even really great composers from the past had pieces that were
exactly,
like,
there's clunkers. You know, Beethoven has some clunkers. And that doesn't
Corleone Orchard. Actually, that's a kind of good piece.
Well, and also there, you know, there's also the dozens, the hundreds, and thousands of composers that no one remembers.
Nobody cares. Yeah.
and so like.
Maybe some music historians care.
That's really, historians, of course. But that's also like, that's kind of like a scary, depressing thought. Like, if you're a composer, I would imagine it's like, am I going to be one of the hundreds of thousands of
what's my legacy? Well, that's why I'm not a composer. I mean, I'm a songwriter, but I'm not a composer.
It's easier for everything to get saved now. Things just don't disappear. If I put up this podcast, like it's stuck on iTunes forever.
God bless. Yeah.
So don't say anything too crazy.
I will
so,
flip out.
So Acceptet came out of like some of your collaborations at Bang on a Can.
Yep.
Like you mentioned several names.
Chuck Furlong and Mark Utley were the two people that I
clarinet and percussion.
Exactly.
That's what I got out of
and
that.
And then we also, so like when we decided to form Acceptet, so like the seven of us all got together.
This was what, 2013, 14?
In the fall of 2014, we decided to be a group.
Gotcha.
Our first concert was in the spring of 2015. So, like, in that first meeting, we're like, okay, let's commission some composers. So we ended up commissioning five friends, basically, who are composers, mm-hmm. and they wrote us awesome pieces, and I was really,
right.
really excited about it. And then we also played a piece by Chris Cerrone that was already existed, but that's the only piece that we've played that wasn't already in our, you know, that wasn't written for us, basically. Mm-hmm. And since then, we've commissioned a bunch of other composers. I'm not sure, and then we have more coming this year, so we're, like, staying very active. I think, it's like, what I like about the ensemble commissioning young composers who are earlier in their careers is that it's, like, helpful for both.
Yeah, and you know? They don't cost as much.
I wish we could pay people, like, so much more than, you know. But, like, you know, just up front at the beginning. But, like, for... I mean, the funny thing is, like, a lot of the composers that we've... that we commissioned initially, like, then their careers kind of, like, took off. So now we're like, ooh, we have this...
Well, piece, I mean, know? And you can take credit for that, so.
Yeah, I'll be like, it was definitely because of their XFTET piece. anyway. Okay.
Well, I mean, why go with that? I mean, you use this, like, Stravinsky model as far as, like, instrumentation goes.
Yeah.
Why, I mean...
Creative solutions, like, to a weird, clunky ensemble.
People
have come up... I mean, honestly, I've been really impressed with the solutions that composers have had for our ensemble.
Because, so. I mean, sure, like, Stravinsky wrote for that, but, like, he was... The dude was insane.
That's just, like, who was around, too, right? That was just, like, the...
Yeah, I guess. I mean, sure. But... He had a history of, like, doing weird shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you're not necessarily... If you're, like, a composer, you're like, what the fuck do I do with this? Why would you do this to me?
Air sounds for the brass. vibraphone. No, actually, in all honesty, so, like, Brendan Rendell Myers is a composer that we've been working with. He's a really fantastic composer. Anyway, he wrote... We're hoping to do this seven movement piece with him, and he's written two of the movements, and so one of them, it's like each of them is featuring one of us, and one of them that features Mark Utley on percussion is literally, it's called Chopsticks, and there are chopsticks in an amplified guitar, and he's, like, hitting the guitar with chopsticks, mm-hmm. and it's like, and it sounds crazy. It's, like, it's really cool. So that was, like, a creative way to deal with instrumentation, because that's sort of, like, the forefront.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, and just kind of, like, balancing the ensemble. I don't know. Everyone has come up with really cool things. I've been very impressed.
Yeah.
So there.
So there.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, with the number of different things you do as a violinist, like, whether you're doing, like, a new music type of deal with, like, whether you're playing with XFTET, I'm gonna abandon that line of thought, and just, like, go with you as music director of this ensemble, I keep bringing up the, like, just the unusualness of the instrumentation, whatever, that's we've talked about that plenty, but but, like, if you're, like, running the group and, like, trying to find places to perform, and, like, well, sure, you have, you know, it's nice as a young, you know, as, like, a younger musician, like, you generally will have a network of friends, like, who are mm-hmm. composers and who are, like, willing to, like, do stuff.
It's essential. It's crucial for survival as a musician.
But from a non-musical point of view, like, how are you, like, really handling that? And this can, like, apply to like the bluegrass, you know, like, to go with other stuff, and, like, to the multiple things that you're involved with.
It's a lot of work. Like, you'd be shocked at how much work it is to put on one concert.
No, I would not be shocked at all.
Okay, you're not shocked. I'll just stay for the record. It's so much more work than you would ever think.
Yeah.
For anything, because there's not only just getting the space, like, coordinating people's schedules.
Where was the last place you played?
We played at the Queen's New Music Festival, and before that, we did the Ecstatic Music Festival.
Right.
That was, like, a big, you know, there's just so much. I mean, even just down to, like, okay, we need to make a stage plot. Okay, we need to, like, do this. There were just, like, so many little things mm-hmm. on the checklist. And, you know, it's, like, I did it. We did it.
Yeah.
And I had help, you know, like, you know, the, like, especially like Chuck and Mark were really great. Like, we like worked together on a lot of things.
Well, you're
and
never going to do those things by yourself.
Yeah. And that concert was also crazy for me because that was a double bill with Gold Feather and Xceptet. And then Xceptet and Gold Feather like played two Gold Feather songs together. So there was like all sorts of like crazy coordination.
Well, you said the bass player plays in both.
So it's like, yeah.
And you've got like multiple people across both, right? Or just you and the bass player.
Yeah, really. So there's some crossover, but yeah, it's a weird, it's just a lot of people's schedules to deal with.
People are busy.
Yeah.
People also have to make money.
Yeah. I mean, that's the other thing is that like both of these projects are totally passion projects and that's, you know, it's hard because, especially in Gold, it's not that I don't think that the people in Gold Feather don't like being there, but like, you know, obviously, like it's my last name, and like, so I'm the one who is like the most like invested. And again, it's not to say that they're not invested in it. Like, yeah. They're all like super awesome, wonderful people and musicians. I'm like so grateful to have them. But yeah, it's hard. Like, if a really lucrative gig comes up for one of them, I think, you know, it's like hard.
Yeah.
You know, so that's something I think about a lot.
I was just. My friend Will Lang, he's a trombone player that like one of the commissions a shit ton. Load Bang.
Load Bang. Okay, yeah. I know.
He's
who
one
is.
Of the, yeah.
He probably doesn't know who I am, but I know who he is. Does. It's creepy.
What?
So that's creepy. I know who he is.
But what was like? Oh, but he sent me this blog. I hesitate to say a blog post, but it was a really long piece by Nico Muley. Mm-hmm. About his own personal dealings with when you're dealing with things that you are so invested in. And,
oh, I should read that.
And it's not necessarily like, and dealing with, not dealing with, but collaborating with people who are maybe not as invested because they're not, their name's not on it. Or, and it's not like that they're not invested, but there's like literally no possible way for them to be as invested in it as you are because...
Yeah.
Like for, you know, in a situation where your name's on it and you're writing all the songs and you're like fronting the band.
Yeah.
Like there's, you know, the someone playing guitar or bass or drums like can be really invested in it. But there's, you know, and there's dealing with just like little things like, oh, why didn't they respond to my email right away?
My or, daily neurosis.
Or, yeah. You know, I texted them like 3 times and they haven't gotten back to me. Well, you know, they're in a concert.
Yeah. Yeah, I've learned ways to like. Mostly, I just have to remember like they don't hate you.
Yeah, and I deal with this thing where like I'm like oh yeah, I'm not holding it against you. I'll like they'll apologize. I'll be like, oh no, it's totally fine. But then in the back of my brain, I'll be like,
but, oh no, I've learned to not take things personally. Like it's this been a really good just remind myself like this is where like the weird nebulousness between friends and colleagues gets kind of muddled because. You'd be like, I know this person is my friend, and they like want to be involved, but I also totally understand that gig pays a lot of money, and they should take that. Like, and I'll say that I'll be like, hey, I get it. You're you know, and what I appreciate, and I try to work with people who are just upfront about that kind of thing because I appreciate that. Like, if someone is gonna say, you know, like, listen, I can't do this because this other thing came up or whatever, or like I can't this isn't enough money, whatever. I'd rather just know because that to me is less. Personal,
yeah.
You know, it makes it less personal.
Yeah,
it becomes personal when they don't tell you for a while.
Yeah, it's like,
and then you're screwed.
If you tell me as soon as you know, and then I can find some other way to, I can find a workaround.
Yeah, or like I try to be as flexible as I can to, you know, be like, okay, what can I do to like make this into something that you know? So yeah, and you come up with creative solutions. I feel like. It's one thing that like a lesson that I've definitely learned is that like you can have like a really strong sense of what you want to do and have a really clear idea of your trajectory, but you also have to be really, really okay with that just completely changing.
Yeah,
and you have to be okay with like everything that you had like set out in a line, you know, all your ducks in a row. The ducks are gonna fly away, so yeah, and you have to gather them. They're gonna be in a different order, in a different direction, and that's okay.
Yeah, and it's. You just kind of got to keep working at it.
And just always, I guess my MO is just like, throw a bunch of shit at a wall and see what sticks, which is why I like do all these groups, maybe in a certain sense. Like I'm like, okay, well, I can't get too disappointed if like that thing falls through because I also have like these other things that I'm like kind of hearing about. So then it's like really awesome when when things go well, but I'm not like devastated because I don't have, yeah, like I feel like having all your eggs in one basket is a risk, but also spreading yourself too thin is a risk. So there's no way to win.
You're just gonna, you're gonna fall on your face no matter what. Which actually is true, like you're gonna fall on your face at some point no matter what.
Oh, I've fallen on my face so many times. It's got calluses on my nose.
Yeah, and that can be valuable, just as valuable as...
Like, totally. Well, you learn from... I mean, God, I can't tell you how many mistakes I've made. Like, just silly errors, big errors, small errors. And I've learned from them. Mm-hmm. And, I, you know, that's been really helpful. And I try to, every time I make a mistake, I mean, at first I'll be like, oh my God, what is wrong with me? And
then, what have I done?
Yeah, and then I'll be like, okay, like, what's really the damage that's done here. And like usually if I really think about it, I'm like, okay, like I can bounce back from this. Or even not a mistake, or just like a situation arises, right, and I'm like, oh my God. But I try not to have that, oh my God,
not quite as much
reaction as much. Yeah, just be like, okay, objectively, here's the situation. Okay, here's some solutions. Let's find one. Mm-hmm. It's hard to do that.
Yeah.
I have to objectively.
Well, and like, I mean, so you mentioned like these like different chamber kind of experiences and the bluegrass elements and all this stuff. These are all like you just mentioned, they're like passion projects.
Totally, yeah.
So, you know, how do you balance that between thing, you know, balance that with what you actually do to make money?
Oh, I mean, good question.
Because I mean, well, because like you just mentioned, like, well, for me, I use, you know, this podcast doesn't pay me anything. Like iTunes,
what?
iTunes isn't like paying money for this shit. It's free. Like, it's a lot of work. Like in the summer, it's not quite as bad because I don't have as much stuff to do. But
I don't know. I mean, I enjoy, like, I teach and I freelance. That's how I make money. And I mean, I enjoy doing both of those things, but I feel like I treat those like a job.
Mm.
You know, I mean, like, I do a good job.
You have no passion for your students. Is that
no,
what you're
I saying? Actually love teaching. I love my students. Like, yeah, especially when they really like do something. Like, they listen to what you say, and you're just like, oh my God. You like watch kids grow up. Like, I've had the same students from like third to eighth grade, and it's like really awesome to see their progress. Anyway,
right.
Yeah, but the thing, you know, those things don't necessarily take up like a huge amount of hours in the day. Like, a lot of my hours in the day working are like sending emails or like practicing, or, you know, like but there's other like non-scheduled work.
Well, I mean, so let's say you're doing an XEPTET thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you do all the work, you do the thing, and you send out, you know, send everyone their parts and all this stuff, and there's like an expectation that people will look at their stuff before they come, or at least you would like them to be, etc. Mac, you don't have to say whether or not that happens. That's fine. But you know, like, it's a freelancer, it's a real struggle to sometimes to try and be prepared for a gig, you know, just because if there's so many demands on your time, like taking just even if it's just 30 minutes. So like, how do you look at it from a thing where you're a leader of a group and you want people to come in prepared, and as a musician on your own, where you feel like a struggle to be prepared for your own things,
well,
where you're not the leader.
I feel like, I feel like I am prepared for things, but I'm not the leader. I mean, that's just part of the, you know, I'll like look at my parts.
I'm
and
not.
Stuff, you know?
I'm not saying no. I'm not. I'm not accusing you of anything.
Okay, cool. Just to be clear,
I just know I play with people who aren't always prepared.
Yeah, well,
it's
that's
frustrating, and
that's
never. It's a never-ending thing. That's fine. I think I just talked myself into a corner.
You're trying to say, how do you, how...
Yeah, like, here's a better way to approach it. How has being the director of your own groups, like, affected how you approach this in your, when you're not the leader of the group?
Oh, I have a lot more sympathy for people who run groups.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, oh yeah, I know that's hard. That's annoying. Or else, but I also will, like, learn from people. Like, I literally, like, I've played with Contemporaneous, and I just, like, stole their like spreadsheet format for like scheduling rehearsals because it was great, it worked really well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think that there's any plagiarism involved there, but I, you know, it was
not trademarked.
No, definitely not. But I was like, oh cool, like you're like David Bloom, good job. I don't know who did it, but like that's great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's how, you know, so I learned from them. But yeah, I also, when I play in other groups, yeah, I try to like keep that in mind. I think I'm much more sensitive to like how frustrating it can be if somebody is not, you know, shows up late or like does this or that. But it's not like a game-ending frustration, you know what I mean?
Of course not. It's never, like, because that's stupid. That's just more stress on yourself. Like, yeah. You're like, when you get to that point, yeah, you're annoyed at the person.
Whoever sure, and offending. I can really clarify that, like, I really love everyone I work with, and I don't, I have, oh, no, no, no,
that, that has, that has nothing, no, that has nothing to do with, like, I'm not,
just
I'm not,
wanted to be,
I'm yeah. not trying to, like, get you to shit talk anyone, I'm just, this is you all, can't get me to, this is all about, it. This is all about you.
Okay, it's, of course it is.
Well, from then, just from, like, a playing perspective, like, that's balancing a lot of different shit, like, going back and forth between, like, new music is its very specific thing, more pop. Rock kind of feel is a very specific thing, and then, you know, like any freelancer, you do orchestras and, you know, pick up orchestras and stuff that are their own thing. It's one thing for a brass player. It has its own challenges that come with, like, today I'm playing with a big band, tomorrow, or no, this past week I did orchestra and, you know, pops orchestra stuff, and today I'm playing with a big band, and next week I might be doing something else, like just doing.
To me, that's like the stuff. Fun part.
Well, is it
like it keeps everything like new and
keeps
fresh.
Yeah, it keeps it new and fresh. But as from like just like a straight up playing perspective, I know how it works for brass players. I do not know how it works for string players. Like, is it like a specific? You know, do you have to change your approach? Do you have to change your sound? Do you have to change, like, technically what you do? You know, for like. For some of this stuff?
You mean like going back and forth between like straight classical and new music and like folk bluegrass music?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, of course the style changes. I mean, that'd be weird if it didn't.
Yeah,
it would be right. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it is a different approach, and like there's different ways of working with people. I don't know. I feel like in my life I'm very capable of being either like super alpha or super beta. So like obviously in like the groups that I run, I'm the alpha, like, probably to, like, the point of being, like, too intense, you might, if you talk to any of people I work with, you know, just being, like, okay, we have to, like, get, I'm just, like, always panicked, like, about, you know, like, okay, if we don't, like, schedule this right now, it's not gonna happen, like, if we don't do, so I'm kind of, like, really, I'm crazy about, like, follow-ups and, mm-hmm. and just, like, making sure that things actually follow through, otherwise that doesn't happen, but I also am totally cool to be just beta, if I'm, like, someone else is in charge of this thing right now. Like things are going really weirdly. That's fine. Like I'm just gonna when they tell me to do something, I'm gonna do it. They say jump, I'll say how high. Especially if I'm getting paid, I'm like yeah. I'm.
And that, it's a nice break from having to.
Yeah, like do I don't have to use yourself. My. Yeah, I'm just like I'm just here to like play my part, have a good attitude, you know. So it's a, I don't know, it's a different thing. And you also like the more that you freelance, the more you're just like everyone's just figuring it out. Mm-hmm. Like nobody's God here. I mean, some people have figured out more than others, but like things always go wrong. You know, there's always like nonsense that's happening behind the scenes. And when you're behind the scenes, you're like, well, that's nonsense. I don't know why that's happening, but it's, okay, cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna get into any specifics there, but yeah, it's certainly a thing. Yeah, but where you're just like, oh, people are just making mistakes all the time. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. That's kind of refreshing. Is that weird to say?
I mean, I personally, I don't know if I would say that it's fine, because that would bother me.
Fair enough.
But that's me. That's how I feel about it. So the crap. So when you're doing. Like your own songwriting and performing, you're not doing writing for your other groups, right?
No, I mean, I did arrangements I wouldn't rule it out, but yeah.
Well, of course not. You can't.
Yeah, but
it's
obviously.
It's 2016, musicians can't rule anything out anymore.
I know, everything's happening.
You can't afford to do that.
Yeah, fair enough. You have to be well-rounded.
Like, where does that kind of stuff come from? Like, bluegrass is, like, I mean, is a very specific type of genre.
Yeah, I feel like I don't even write in the bluegrass genre. Like, I feel like I write songs, and then I happen to have a bluegrass band. So, like, that's sort of where it is right now. Like, I mean, it sounds... Like, I feel like I really... I try to avoid, like, obvious bluegrass tropes.
Yeah.
None of that. I mean, there's some, like on our upcoming album that's coming out this fall, like there's definitely like one or two songs where you're just like banjo, yeah, or, yeah, you know, of course. But, yeah, or you're like okay, that kind of has like a more of a gimmicky bluegrassy feel to it than the other stuff. But
what kind of, you know, like with the actual specific, maybe like lyrically or yeah, there we go. lyrically and poetically, like what kind of vibes do you like generally either draw from or aim for?
Draw from my own life. I'm such a millennial. I write about people that I know, and I write about feelings that I've had. I try not to make them too emo, but you know, you can never, like, I feel like the most emo things I write, I'm like, this has to be an upbeat song.
Mid to late 20s, what are you gonna do?
Yeah, I know this is, I know I'm just like part of a cliche, that's fine.
You live in Brooklyn, you have a bluegrass band.
Oh yeah, like, no, I mean, I could not be, I'm just like down to the letter. I'm trying to like have my own voice within something that's, you know, I hate the term singer-songwriter. It like fills me with like,
yeah, it has a very specific connotation.
Yeah, it just makes, it's like a, you know, a Jack Johnson with guitar type, which is just like can't fathom being
playing at Cafe Vivaldi and Path and like, oh, all that. Well, not Path is doesn't exist anymore, but no, yeah, different places like that, which are cool.
It's,
but
fine.
Like,
I'm not trying to be disdainful of this genre.
But
just,
if
like,
you
not,
go
you know.
If you go to the open mics of those places, you find that cliche, and they are terrible, and some of them are terrible.
Yeah,
they're not all terrible.
Yeah, I feel like because of my classical training, like I really give a lot of thought to the arrangements. Now, that being said, like in the band, like my band is so great that they, I'll be like, do like a banjo thing here, mm-hmm. And then like Nathan Cosey will just be like, oh, like this. And
oh,
then
Nathan's in your band.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, he's awesome.
Yeah, 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 he's incredible.
He's so good at everything he
I'm
does.
Just like, it's, so I feel so grateful that he like dare lower himself to play in this
do.
band. Yeah, no, he plays banjo and accordion, mm-hmm. In the group, and he sings, so
right.
You know. But yeah, but I'll like have like a sense, and I'll be like, there should be like some like bass swells here, and then like Pat Sivoda will be like, yeah, like this, and I'm like, yeah, that sounds
perfect.
Great. Oh my god,
you're perfect.
Yeah, but like, but I do. But the only thing is probably like the vocal harmonies, with some exceptions. I'll be like, these are the vocal harmonies, mm-hmm. And then actually, before we recorded this album, one of the songs, Katie Martucci, who's awesome singer, guitar player, she like never played with us before. I just had a good feeling about her. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you want to play it? You want to record this album? I know you've never played with this. And she was like, hey, I have this like really great idea for like, or, no, she didn't say that. She wasn't even that bold. She was like, I don't know, I'm like feeling like, what do you think about like this for a vocal line? And I was like, yeah, yeah, what? We're doing that.
Yeah.
So then for me, it's like hard to do a stripped down version of the band. Like, I love having all five people, which is just like kind of untenable, unfortunately, in all scenarios. Cause I'm just like, so, like, to me, like, what I'm singing is, like, not even as important as, like, listen to what this band is doing here.
Listen to who's playing behind me.
Yeah, yeah, listen to how great, like, listen to that, like, mandolin, like, isn't that, like, Dylan McKinstry, you're killing it right now. You know, so that's, it's sort of funny that way. It's, like, hard for me. I have to, like, let go of my darlings at times. But, yeah, so I come to them with this song. And there are times, too, like, there's another song, like, before, like, the day before we went down to record, Nick Tipp, the sound engineer that we worked with, who's awesome, he was like listening to the rehearsal, and then he was like, there should be another chorus song. And I was like, what? And then I thought about it, and I was like, yeah, there should be another chorus. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, so we added that at the last minute. So I'm not saying, like, I definitely have like a pretty strong sense of like where I want the songs to go, but I also like am continually surprised and admiring of the musicians I work with for their great ideas and contributions.
Of course.
I would be remiss not to say so. That's why I keep them around.
Yeah. Do like those kind of less traditional sensibilities when it comes to like, whether you're playing and that kind of thing, do those seep into your other musical pursuits? If not necessarily like in like a technical sort of way, but in a mentality sort of way.
Wait, do you mean does my violin background go into band stuff, or what do you mean?
No. The other way around. From like,
oh,
yeah, because I mean, sure, your violin playing across all sorts of shit, but
sure, yeah.
But like, it's just a different sensibility, like mentally, and like when it comes to your, I don't know. I think about my own playing, I usually am influenced by like. When I think about my own playing, I try to glean influences from like rock music, even if I'm playing Bach, you know.
Yeah, like, well, actually, I remember Todd Reynolds, the violinist, told me that. Yeah, of course, he told me once that he practiced he practices Bach with a beat, like a drum beat.
Yeah, of course.
Which I was like, that's a great idea, actually.
I had classes with him when I was at
Mass. Oh, that's very good. Mass, yeah. So, yeah. But I was like, that's a cool idea. Yeah, I mean, that's a, I don't know. I don't know. I feel like I try to, like, get into, the, like, the genre that I'm in. So, like, if I'm playing straight classical, I'm not going to, like, bring in, like, slippy, slidey.
Well,
like,
if you're playing an orchestra, you can't do that. That's, right, yeah. That would be inappropriate. But, you know, I don't know.
But if I'm doing, like, a rock gig or something, sure, yeah. You know, I'll be, like...
I mean, I guess it would be more applicable to, like, a situation where you're playing solo type stuff. Solo,
sure, yeah.
In a classical format, but also, like,
Well, this... So, actually, a great example is that Julia Wolf piece that I was mentioning. So, I worked with Julia on this piece called With a Blue Dress On, which is for five singing, stomping violinists. So I recorded four of the singing, stomping violinists actually at Dolan at NYU, which is mm-hmm. awesome.
And then you perform the other one
live? Yeah, and I do the other one live. So yeah, it's cool. I've done that a bunch of places. I did like a TEDx thing at the Met Museum last year. Did you? Yeah. but that's like a perfect piece for me. Mm-hmm. No, I mean, it wasn't written for me, but like it was because it's super, it's like really fiddly and like stomping.
But it's
like
also,
wild.
But it also like, has its like, it's a classical element type thing.
Sure. I mean, I guess it's, you know, a new music piece. So yeah.
Yeah, new music because it encompasses so much shit now that it's like hard to make the delineation.
Yeah, new music is just like a grab bag.
Yeah.
At this point.
The performer is also a grab bag.
Yeah,
exactly. Crazy weird people.
Oh yeah, love definitely. It. Yeah, they're great. I love new music people. but yeah, so like that would be like a good example where like I mean, yes, it's like classical music in a certain sense, but I am like rocking out to it. And so I get, you know, that comes from my other training, I suppose.
Right.
Yeah. And like solo stuff, I think that maybe I do.
I'm just interested in it, like, not just as it relates to you, but just in general, like how the lines in the 21st century, the lines are more blurred than they, lines delineating things are more blurred.
There's no lines
than
anymore.
Blurred. That depends on who you talk to.
That's true. I mean, some people would, some of the music on this new Gold Feather record, I'm like, could this be new music? I don't know.
Right.
is this a band or is
like,
it?
Like, you know? There's this dude, I don't know, you might not be familiar with him. His name, he's Icelandic. His name's Ólafur Arnalds. He did several soundtracks for the BBC show Broadchurch. And,
oh, cool.
He's written some soundtracks, but I think he lives out here in Brooklyn, but he's Icelandic. He does like these classical things, but it's electronic. Like electronic classical, like a lot of cello, but he also
does like a Kishibashi or something.
Yeah, similar. Yeah, similar. He's a little. I think he came a little bit before him. He's still a young dude, but you know, he does shows at LPR every occasionally. But it's like this kind of thing where yeah, it's classical music, but it's also like new music, but it's also like this pop sensibility.
Totally.
But it's all really good. It's not done in a shitty way.
Right.
Like
right.
Took, you know, because there are some like crossover things that.
Well, in any genre of music, there's good and bad.
Well, of course. I mean, yeah, but now it's just more acceptable to blur that line than it has been in the past.
Yeah, not in a Robin Thicke way, but yeah.
Anything that I was going to say about that is really awful, so I'm not going to say anything.
Okay, we'll just leave it at that. Yeah.
So, where can people find all the shit that you do?
They can find more about Goldfeather the Band at goldfeatherband.com.
Oh, wow, that makes sense.
Yeah. And then just all the other stuff is just at sarahgoldfeather.com. Mm-hmm. We have a Facebook page.
You have Facebook pages for each of your
groups. Goldfeather, Accept Chat, Fragments Duo. I play in a... I'm starting this electronics group.
Are you?
Right, I know. I wouldn't even talk about it, but with this awesome percussionist key player... Robbie Bowen and Pascal LeBeau.
Oh, of course, I know Robbie.
Oh, you know Robbie? Okay, yeah. So those who are awesome, we've been like holing up in Princeton where Pascal lives and just like making some I think some cool stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's also cool because I'm like I like listen to so much electronic music and I was like I'm gonna be an electronics band.
That's...
By the way, I know both of them from Bang in a Can too. Other year. So.
And that's still in, like, the beginning stages?
Oh, yeah. We just have, like, we're, like, yeah. We're Well, hopefully by the end, by this time next year, we'll have like an EP. Mm-hmm. Don't hold me to that. But that's kind of our...
EP, live performances, something.
Yeah, we'll have something to show for it. We don't have a name yet, so don't bother me about that.
I'm not bothering you about anything. We don't have a Facebook page. I'm a nice person. I'm not going to bother anyone.
Good.
That's not true. It's called emailing people and being annoying and being like, talk to me. Brr.
Please tell me.
Yeah. Please talk to me about things, mm-hmm. about music. I'd be interested. Music? Anyway, that's how I bother people. Well, thank you for doing this.
Of course. Was, thanks for, you know, for having me.
Fun.
Yay. Times. Music.
Music.
Music. Brr. Yeah, exactly. My love for you is buried in the snow.